All right, everybody, welcome into the Hours. I'm Mark. I'm joined by Tyler. Together, we're Savvy Coaching. Thanks for listening. Make sure to share the pod with a coaching friend of yours. We appreciate you listening and glad that you're here. Tyler, what's going on?
I'm glad we're Savvy Coaching together. It's a lot more fun to be able just to bounce things off people. So I would ask coaches, what's going on? Who are you doing it with? Who are you coaching with? That's actually a big reason why, for me personally, I transitioned away from just running camps for players with a desire to support coaches. Is as I was around so many coaches that came through our camps at Point Guard College, or I did clinics for, or whatever, they were just hungry for any sort of partnership, community support, and, you know, would have no relationship with a coach. A coach would come spend 5 days with me and my staff at a camp, and it would fill them up for an entire year, they said, because they were lacking like this peer-to-peer support, connection, sharpening. And so I think it really just suggested and indicated to me there is a massive gap, hole, need in this profession of coaching for connection, true relationship, and support. And so, I mean, that's why we're Savvy Coaching, and that's why, you know, Mark and I are doing it together, because it's so much better together. So thanks for being a part of it, whether you're just listening to the podcast, whether you are all in and invested with us in our community, where Mark and I are connecting with you all the time, or if you've bought a course, kind of gets you into community with other Savvy Coaches. I think all of these connection points really help us feel like we have a home and a team and a support system, which is key. It's really, really hard to be successful doing something alone.
You mentioned just like coaches wanting to have a pack that they run with. I think that's what I looked forward to the most of going to a coach's clinic, is just like seeing coaches and connecting with coaches I haven't seen in a long time. Here's a question we get a lot. It's about our Savvy shot scale. It's unique. It's interesting. It's sticky. It helps improve field goal percentage with coaches. If you're looking for something this off season to dive into and make your team better, improve your shot selection. Just that is a constant feedback that we give coaches. It's a lens that once you start to see shot selection in a different way, you can't unsee it, and it's going to unlock a lot of things in your program. So Tyler, why don't you tell us a little bit about Savvy shot scale, how it originated and how we could apply it?
Yeah. In its simplest form, it just rates the shot on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. And the intent behind having a rating system is to get away from what most coaches say, which is that's a good shot and that's a bad shot, because that doesn't actually educate a player. And it really leads to a lot of arguments and defensiveness by a player. Like when you tell a player that's a bad shot, and they're coming from a place of like, they believe in themselves and, you know, I can make it, coach. That is where there's a ton of disconnect, and the indicator of a really well-coached team is the shots that they take. Well, if you want to influence the shots that your team takes, you need a better language and a better scale to use than good shot, bad shot, good shot, bad shot, which just leads to conflict and frustration and players feeling like my coach doesn't believe in me. So if you're listening for the first time, or you aren't a user of the Savvy Shot Scale, step one would just be stay away from the black and white good shot, bad shot, because it's so much more complex than that. Instead, we try to help players understand that everything is rated on a continuum, and a shot is good or bad, not because it goes in or not, which would be resulting, but its quality, it depends on when it leaves your hand, all of these other factors. And so that is a massive shift that I think the shot scale will provide you. And so how we address that is just with this understanding of like, okay, what's the best shot you can get? And a lot of times a coach will have this idea in their head, like this is our shot versus your shot. Well, even that I think can be a little bit limiting. And so we have this idea of there's no such thing as a 10, you know, just how we might think about a spouse, partner, date, romantic relationship, right? When we're evaluating a partner and rating them on a 10-point scale, I think we all just need to understand that there's no such thing as a 10. Any one of us that have been married for any period of time or in a long-term relationship recognize that there's no such thing as a 10. There's no such thing as that perfect person. Everyone has flaws and gaps. And if we were to compare our partner or our wife or our husband, if we could compare them to what a 10 is, well, then we could very easily have an out in the relationship. Well, oh, they're just not the perfect person for me, right? They're not my one and only, because out there, I think there is this 10, and that's really, really damaging. And I think that's really damaging in the shot, in shot perception as well. It's like, oh, perfect shot, a shot that we would never miss. Everyone's missed a wide open layup. So instead we say, hey, there's no such thing as 10s. Let's remove that ideal, but there are such thing as 9s, and a 9 out of 10 is what we want. So instead of saying get to the rim or, you know, get a layup, we say get a 9. And a 9 has a little bit more definition to it. A 9 is a big advantage or open layup. That's what a 9 is. Because contested layups are not what we want. Off balance layups are not what we want, but 9s are what we want. So we can say, hey, get a 9. So I'll pause right there, because we're going to go through all of the numbers here. But what's one thing that you have observed or in the value of using a shot scale versus just saying good and bad?
I would say it gives you consistent language. Like you talked about, we don't want layups. We don't want, I forgot what else, the words you use, but I've just been around programs, and even in my own program, as I train the assistant coaches that were working with us and our players, they would say, hey, you know, get to the rack or shoot a layup or shoot a big advantage shot. And it's like, hey, can we all align that we are always going to communicate 9? Because one of our principles is we hunt 9s first. Right. So the more your players hear that sticky language, the more they're going to be able to grab onto it. I've also found it becomes very easy to measure as well. One measurement tool that I would suggest coaches use in the Savvy Shot Scale immediately is, can we make 50% of our shots 7s or better, or even just 9s or 7s? So it gives you a little bit, something a little bit more tangible that you can measure for your team. I do want to ask you 2 follow-up questions here. And I'll start with a comment. No matter how good looking she is, she might look like a 10, somebody's sick of her. Like just somebody just like has to get away, you know, can't deal, wasn't right for them. Okay, here are my questions. Because this is something I think all coaches have run into. I know certainly I have too. A player feels like, you even said it, I can make that shot. And I think what we would try to communicate is like, yes, you might be able to make that shot, but we don't need you to make that shot. In fact, if all of your shots were that shot, I'm picturing like a step back or something off the balance, pull up, off balance, kind of a fadeaway. You might be able to make 2 out of 10 of those, but we don't want to shoot 20% from the field, right? Mm-hmm. We want to shoot 50% or better from the field. So that was the way that I communicated that, is you can make it, but you don't need to make it. And I have found a lot of resistance from coaches as far as either defining roles and reads or just having the shot selection conversation with their players. Anything that has worked for you as far as having those conversations?
Let's just jump to another number here. Okay. So 9s, big advantage or open layups. 5s, 5 out of 10. I would actually suggest those shots that are maybe a little bit of an argument with players about whether or not it's a good shot for us or not, just call it a 5. So if Mark's saying, I can make that shot, I would be generous with them and say, yeah, you can make that shot about half the time, right? And they'd be like, yeah, I can. 50% from the field's amazing, right? And I would say, well, we don't want to get 5s first because it's only 50%. We want to hunt 9s first and not settle for 5s. Because if team B shoots all 5s and team A shoots all 9s, who's going to win? That's a really easy question. Like, oh, yeah, the 9s, right? Okay, so then let's not get excited about 5s. Inevitably, there's going to be times we have to take them, and there's going to be times that we settle for them, but let's not hunt them. And that's really the difference of the mindset. And usually that helps players. If like I acknowledge and throw that player a bone and say, yeah, I know you can make that shot. And about half the time, and there's gonna be times that you have to take it, but that's what we'd settle for. And, you know, again, I have this conversation a lot with like college and high school age guys. So I'll use that specific analogy, right? It's like, hey man, would you be really proud to bring a 5 home to meet your parents? You know what I mean? Would you be proud to like talk to your boys like, yeah, I'm going to marry this one? No. Okay. So like, Yeah, inevitably, are you going to make some mistakes in your life? Yeah, you know what I mean? But like, you're not, you don't take pride in that. And that kind of shifts the mindset a little bit. So I think like just acknowledging that's just a five, right? And then let's jump to another number in here. These are like the numbers that you can use the most. A seven. A seven is big advantage, wide open, off the catch three by a green light shooter. That's a seven. And so we want to hunt nines first, sevens second, and avoid fives early. 9, 7, 5. And if you just did the exercise in film, did the exercise in conversation, and turned it into a daily conversation with your players, 9, 7, 5, 9, 7, 5. Those are really the only three numbers that you need to start with to begin to have players to understand the difference of the types of shots we want, 9s, 7s, and 5s. And when we first start working with teams and we start breaking it down, the majority of their shots are fives. Like over 50%, sometimes trending towards 70% are fives. And you know, when you think about an 8-point game, think about last season. How many games did you lose by 8 points or less? All of those games could have been won with better shot selection. You move 1 5 to a 7 or 9 per quarter, and all of a sudden you have a really good chance of winning that game. Right, that's it. It's just that simple, right? That's a 2 to 4 point swing every quarter times 4 quarters, call it 3 points. That's 9 points. You know, if you average it out, and you just won the game that you lost. You don't need a better system. You don't need better players. You don't need better shooters even. You don't need more breaks from the ref. You just need to turn a five into a 7 or 9 one time per quarter. And I bet every game you look at on film, you could identify at least 1 5 per quarter. Mark, what would you say? Like the average high school team, how many fives do they take per quarter?
Several. I mean, I would say yeah. most film that I watch, the majority of the shots, in my opinion, are fives.
Yes.
But you know, one thing that I might be unique, I don't know if we differ on this. I hate small advantage threes. I don't think at most levels, you shouldn't be shooting them. Like, watch the NBA. Defenses are so good. They're so long. They're so athletic. Most threes are small advantage. But that's what they have to make, and they can make at that level. When you get a big advantage three in the NBA, I would say those are few and far between, right? At the high school level and even the college level, you should, to me, only be hunting sevens. Again, you said it. We don't hunt fives. But I have seen, let's just call a five a small advantage shot, whether it's a 2 or a 3, I would say the majority of threes that I see teams shoot are fives. And to me, that's a mystery. We should be driving that closeout and expanding advantage. A couple podcasts ago, we talked about feedback that we gave coaches in race and space, drive and space offense. And it was, we're taking too many shots after the first domino. The first domino typically leads to a five. Can we expand and leverage that advantage to get defense in the blender? Now it's just like, okay, we're going to keep this thing clicking until we have an obvious 9 or 7. So I would tell coaches, if your shots are not predictable, you're not doing it right, or you're not taking the right shots. It should be, oh, one more pass, Tyler's getting a 7, or, you know, 2 more passes, we're hitting someone for a 9, or they've got a wide open drive for a 9. Think transition, right? You pitch ahead and you got a 2-on-1, you're thinking, oh, we're probably finishing with a 9 right now. Half court should feel the same way. And I would also argue with coaches, you know, we consult with coaches privately, and a lot of them are asking for some offensive tweaks. And the first thing that I remind them of is, well, did we measure shot selection? Was it where you wanted it to be? Because if not, I would argue we probably don't need to change anything with your offense until we address shot selection. So if you're taking, if you're not creating, or I guess, like we said, expanding your advantage to a 9 or a 7, it doesn't matter what we do. We can run the best actions in the world. We can add 10 actions. But if your players are going to take a first domino five, what's the point?
Yep. I mean, that right there is the quickest way to improve your team's win-loss record. Turn fives into sevens or nines. So we have the three big numbers now, right? 9, 7, 5. That's getting you most of the way. You know, we just kind of, there's no tens, and we don't mess with any numbers below 3. A 3 is just a third grade shot. I mean, it's laughable that it was taken. You decided, I haven't gotten to shoot the ball in a while, And so next time I touch it, it's going up somehow. That's a third grade mindset. It's just a losing mindset. So it's just nice to have a number there so you don't have to have a long conversation in the moment. You just be like, 3, right? And then they know. Now, what do we do with these numbers in between, right? What do we do with these numbers in between 9 and 7? Like, what's an 8, right? Or a 6 or a 4, okay? Well, there's going to be lots of times where there's gray. You know, it's who is the shooter? Who is the defender? You know, so there's a little bit of nuance. So if someone's a better finisher at the rim, so it's not a big advantage or open shot at the rim, right? It's a small advantage shot at the rim. Well, it's an 8, right? It's not quite a 9, it's an 8. And all these numbers in between, you're better finishers, you want to take more 8s, and your worst finishers, you want to take less 8s. It's pretty simple, right? Okay, well, what's a 6, right? Well, it's not quite a 5. It's not quite so-so. It's a little better than that, but it's definitely not a 7. You know, so that's what a 6 would be. Like, you know, a little bit what Mark was talking about is like, okay, it's maybe a smaller advantage 3, but by a really good shooter, that'd be a 6, right? So that would kind of be the difference there. And they're like, what's a 4? Well, 4, it's worse. It's worse than a 5. It's not even 50-50, right? It's not, if a 5 is going to be a floater, right? A 4 is going to be like more of like a runner and off balance, right?
Yeah. A 4 could also be a small advantage shot that you're not necessarily hunting.
Yeah.
You know, so like maybe you take a small advantage mid-range shot. Well, we're not hunting mid-range. We're not hunting small advantage. So it ain't a 5. It's probably closer to a 4. I've also played with this one. I'm actually going to go below 3 here. I'm going to break some rules.
I like that.
Yeah.
We go below 3 here at Savvy, and we're about to find out how.
Yeah, coaches have reached out about the Savvy Shot Scale. This is why we're talking about it today. And some of the feedback is like, hey, if I'm just going to introduce this for the first time, where do I start? Just start with 9s and 7s like you talked about. Then introduce like, okay, that's not a 9 or 7, that's a 5. Tyler presented to our members last night about scaffolding and how to +1. And it was geared more towards player development. We're taking our members through a 4-week deep dive into player development, but I'm going to use a kind of a +1 or scaffolding approach to the Savvy Shot Scale here. I would start this way. 9s are big advantage 2s. 7s are big advantage 3s. 5s, small advantage 2. 3 would be a small advantage 3. 1 is a neutral shot, meaning we don't really have advantages. It would be a quote unquote bad shot, whether that's third grade or just, you know, a really, really tough shot. And then a 0 would be a turnover. I think that would be a good place to start. And then if you want to add some even numbers, some 8, 6, 4s, that would be your +1. I would say, coaches, you don't have to roll out 9 through 3 right away. Just start with the simplest approach. The first principles, we hunt 9s first, 7 second, and then just start +1ing and scaffolding from there.
Yeah, beautiful. You know what would be good? Mark, do you have and I could pull it up as well. It would be interesting just to go through and rate some shots. Do you have any game film you quickly pull up? Or maybe it's interesting just to pull up the national championship game right here on YouTube and just like rate some shots. Would that be interesting?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right, I'll share one more idea while you pull up some film that we'll screen share for all of you that are going to be watching this pod on YouTube. You'll get to see it. And if you're listening on audio, then maybe this section you might want to go try and watch, but we'll talk through it a little bit. We'll describe it a little bit. The last part of the shot scale that I would encourage you to teach your players is to have conversations with each other about it. So too often the shot scale is just the coach talking to the players. We want the players to talk to each other about it. So the best time to coach a teammate into a better decision or a better shot is actually after they make a good decision and not a bad one. So if a player shoots a 3 or a 5, or a poor shot on the shot scale, that's actually not the time to necessarily coach them up into it because everyone's defensive. But I can make that, you know, I've been waiting 5 minutes to shoot, you know, your big that isn't really a great 3-point shooter shoots a really small advantage, highly contested 3 on a pick and pop. Not the time to go up to the big and be like, hey, that's a 5, get a better one, right? That's when they're defensive. Actually, when, you know, it's a great wide open 7 with no help and they're in rhythm and they catch it, make or miss, that's the time to actually go and catch them doing something good. Whether it be the player on the floor, you from the bench, when they do take that shot you've been asking them to hunt, really make a big deal about that, a bigger deal, a more positive impact when they do hunt the shot that we want, so everyone knows it. Or if we, you know, pass up two or three fives to then actually get a nine or an eight at the rim to the bench, that's what we want. That's an eight, right? So teach the positive and give more emphasis and energy when your team actually does hunt the shot that you want, as opposed to constantly teaching the negative. And that's hard and takes intentionality as a coach. Anything to add to that, Mark, before I see you have some film pulled up before we dive into this one?
Yeah, no ad. I do have film pulled up. For some reason, I couldn't get the national championship game to load, but I do have a clip of, I think it's like 10 shots.
Nice.
That I did with our team. So I'll play them. You rate them.
We should both share a rating, because there's probably going to be some different indicators on this one. So we got like an attack and a contested mid-range pull up here. Just made the free throw line by, is that DeJounte Murray?
I don't know.
Yeah, by an NBA player that looks like DeJounte Murray to me. Okay, that one, what would you rate that one?
I'd say a 5.
5? Nice. I would also say a 5. I think it's in his bag, it's in his wheelhouse, but it's not what we want to hunt first.
Yeah, and it wasn't super highly contested. He had separation there, so like small advantage. You know, it's kind of like a gray area one maybe.
Yeah. Ooh, this is going to be a good one. All right, we got to, for those of you listening, Trae Young draws 2, kicks out to John Collins for a 3 on a pick and pop. And it's right on the edge of the wide open big advantage or smaller advantage on the contest. I'm going to go first on that one. And I'm actually going to rate that one a 6 and not a 7. And the reason that I'm rating it a 6, actually, no, I won't say why. What would you rate it, Mark? And then I'll say why.
I'm going 7. Just looking at the advantage that we have, I think I know where you're going with 6, but I won't spoil it. More than an arm's length, to me, we have room, we got range, we got rhythm, we got space. It's big advantage. I go 7.
Yeah, beautiful. So I'd say, and so this is like the next level of nuance for you and your team. So just based on how open the player was, 7. But based on who the player is, I'm going 6. John Collins is not the best shooter we have on the floor. And I would say his game is not a 3-point shoot. Yes, he can make threes, but that's why it'd be a 6 for me based on where he is on our shooting ladder.
I knew that's where you were going.
Yeah.
His personnel. I was taking personnel out of the opinion, out of the equation.
We got Brandon Ingram in his bag, ISO, triple hezzy between tween, cross, highly contested step back, mid-range. All right. I'm going to surprise you on this one. I'm going to go 5. I'm going to go 5 on this one. What would you give it?
That's disgusting. I'm going anything lower than 5, although that is his game. Again, I'm taking that out of the equation. So I'm looking at it through just the lens of the quality of the shot.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. So I think there is a place for that. But the final state of the shot scale, I think, has to be who are you and who are they. And that's an important teaching for your team, is they have to know that a 7 for Mark is not the same as a 7 for me. It's different. And so I think it's important. We do need to recognize that. Now, I understand I'm generous because I'm a little bit more of a sucker for a mid-range shot than you. But I think who are they does matter, even if it's the difference between a 5 and a 3.
Yeah, I use Steph Curry as the prime example here. It's like, how many big advantage threes does he get? He really doesn't get 7s. He has to make small advantage and neutral threes, because that's all he's going to get.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Steph Curry, is he in the GOAT conversation at all for you?
He's not.
No?
What's under GOAT? I mean, people say Mount Rushmore, which I think is kind of dumb as well, but I mean, he's top 10 for me. I think he's changed. He's impacted the game as much as any other player in the history of basketball, as far as the style and direction of the game.
Yeah. And specifically being game plan for every single night and doing what he does. You know, I think if you say top 10, I think that puts you in the conversation at least.
Okay. Then yes. Yes, he's in the conversation.
Yeah. A little ball screen roll, shake, we'll zoom.
Oh, yeah. Zach LaVine, slicing and dicing. Nikola Jokic gives a little wave in the smile. What are you saying?
I'm going 9.
I'm going 9.
Yeah, that was easy. That's been the easiest one so far.
Yeah, it has. And so what we're doing right now, actually, like, do this with your team. If you want to introduce this, do this with your team. Give them a prize, like whoever gets the most correct. Like, the goal of your team is to align with your interpretation. And once that happens, you're in good shape.
Yeah, I'm going to share this video if anybody wants to do this with their team in our community.
Good call.
If you're not a savvy member and you want it, just reach out.
Well, I would actually say,
become a savvy member.
but Mark's more. Or so we're going to do this as a post in our savvy member community, because I don't think we've done this in a while, as just like a challenge for you to send out to your team. So Mark may also put it in our free resources in our community. So we've got two levels of connection with savvy coaching. Level one is coaches that want to buy a course and implement one of our systems. So the moment you buy any one of our courses, like Rose Series to Lock Left to Drill Book, whatever, when you buy one of our courses, you get to be a part of our savvy community, where you get to talk to other coaches that are running savvy systems that have also bought courses. So that's how you get into our savvy community. If you want our coaching and our feedback and our consulting, our support, you want to live training with us every single week, you want us to break down film for you, well, that's how you join our savvy basketball community. That's the higher level of membership where you actually get access to Mark and me. Mark's showing right now on the screen our community. This is for course owners. This is for anyone that has bought one of our courses, so you can get support from each other. Then the next level, and this is really where if you want to transform, I suggest you go. This is our paid community, which gives you every course that we've ever created and the ones that we're currently working on. Once a week live training with us, and the opportunity in the community feature to ask us anything like, what would you rate this shot? For our annual members, we actually break down film of your team. So if you want it all, this is where you go. And if you buy a course, you can get into our savvy community. So we'll post this. Mark can decide if he's going to post it in both places or just one. I'm excited, but I would challenge all of our coaches to run through this with your team. All right. What do we got? Oh yeah. So we've got mid post body fade, good separation, 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't overthink it. It's like, okay, it's not a 9 or a 7. It's probably a 5 unless there's some interesting circumstances.
Yeah, I look at it through this way. Here's the lens. Room, range, rhythm. Is he in range? Yes, he's shooting inside the paint. It's probably everybody's range in the NBA. Is he in rhythm? Kind of. Like, it's not an off rhythm, off like a pivot. And does he have room? So that's where I would say if this is really, really highly contested, it could be below a 5. But he's got space, which space equals advantage. So we're taking a small advantage shot in the paint. It's classic 5.
All right, context matters. Mark, if your 12-year-old daughter took that shot in one of her games, what would you rate it?
A 9? No, I'm
shoot it!
that would be a bad shot. That'd be a 3 or even, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, so again, we're looking at NBA clips. Who it is matters. Who it is matters.
One of the things I love the most about watching NBA is how good they are in the ball screen, obviously. This is what we call a flip screen. See how he's going to change the angle of the screen? Try to, now, defenses are so good too, but the goal here is to flip that angle late to try to get the hedge on the wrong side, right? So I just love watching NBA players play out of a ball screen.
Mark, when would you begin developing players to use and read ball screens, set creative ball screens, hold space off of ball screens? Like, when would you begin using that action in the development process?
Talking about like what level?
Yeah.
I don't know if I could give you a specific level. The way I would evaluate it is there's 3 areas of a ball screen. You got pre-contact, on-contact, and post-contact weapons. So a pre-contact weapon would be just like the angle of your screen in general. I'm big on a back pocket where you're not facing the sideline. It encourages the over more. Goal of a ball screen is to get 2 defenders on the ball. How do we do that? We force the defense to go over, blah, 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 blah. So I would start with one on pre-contact. Then on contact weapon would be like a touch and go or a hot stove screen, or maybe we're holding the screen for a 2 count, just whatever you want your screener to do on the screen. And then post-contact, you've got a pop, you've got a roll, you've got a Gortat, you've got a maybe like a veer into a pin. You got all those options. I would just start with one. here's our first pre-contact, here's our on contact, here's our post-contact. Once we have a good understanding of that, now I'm going to plus one and we're going to add some kind of weapon, either pre, on, or post, depending on what coverages we see the most.
I love all that.
You're going to give me a much simpler answer.
The complexity of all that is what's beautiful about ball screens and also a reason to wait. I'll simplify my answer for this one. When a player can handle pressure, teach a ball screen. Context as to why. The goal of a ball screen is to bring two defenders to the ball. Two defenders to the ball equals an advantage catch somewhere on the floor. You get into dominoes. Well, if a player can't play against pressure or play against two defenders on the ball, you don't want to bring a second defender to the ball. And so that is the developmental question for me of when to teach a ball screen. I think it is the single most effective action to create an engage two situation. That's why it's used so much. It is the best in the world. Again, if you don't, if a player with the ball can't handle pressure or being trapped, then why are you putting them in a disadvantaged situation? So that would be the test for me.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. Okay, there's a legendary coach down here. He's won multiple state titles. Really, really good coach. And I don't think he coaches anymore. And I'm rewinding like 20 years ago. And the game has changed a ton in the last 20 years. But he used to always talk about how much he hates ball screens because it brings two defenders to the ball. When now it's like, hey, when we drive, we want a nine or to bring two defenders to the ball so we can punish them for bringing two defenders to the ball. So it's just funny, like the lens in which you look at the game. But I think the context that you shared is what was lacking 20 years ago, right? Like if you have players that can turn a momentarily disadvantaged situation to a big advantage for your offense, then that's why ball screen is the most common action in the game. It's one of the easiest ways to bring two defenders to the ball, like we see in this clip here.
High school players are so much better now than they were 20 years ago. It's unbelievable.
Just think, like, shooting a three 20 years ago in high school was like a big deal, I feel like.
A big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that I was playing 20 years ago. I remember to this day, it's just a visceral memory for me, so I'll share it. I don't know. District champ, big game, senior year, rivals were up 2 or 3 points with a minute or so left, right? And ball comes to me wide open outside, just wide open, right? And I shoot it. And the moment I shot it, my coach on the bench, like I shot it right in front of our bench. My coach was like, no, like don't shoot a three. We need layups, you know what I mean? Which is like, it's just, the game has changed so much. Now that's like, you earned that amazing shot, right? But I remember like in my ear as I shot it, no, right? And like all the assistants, cause like, they're like, no, we're not a 3-point shooting team. And I made it, and like it turned to this massive argument after the game about like my choice to shoot that. And I'm like, no, that ended the game, coach, right? Let me cook.
The dagger.
Dagger. He's like, that was a five. I'm like, no, that was actually a seven. Yeah.
Anyway. Context matters.
Context matters.
All right. I'll go first on this one.
Yeah.
We hit the roller. Nice wall up.
Yeah.
This is some gray area for me because I think I'm going to go. This is where context really, really matters. I'm going to go 8 here, a reluctant 8, because I don't know who the player is shooting the shot. And
Dwight Powell.
Okay.
Solid finisher.
I don't know his game, but I'm going to say shoulders were inside the backboard. Defense is on his shoulder. To me, that's advantage. I'll take that shot. I think the fool's gold here, I think what I would suggest coaches start to look at through the lens is we don't want these to be the majority of our shots, right? Or the better players or better finishers can hunt these, but not 1 through 12. I wouldn't be comfortable with them taking it or that be the majority. I would say against the better defenses, the more physical, the more athletic, where it was harder to bring two defenders to the ball at halftime, like this was the KPI. It's like, are we settling for small advantage shots? Because even in this situation, against your best defenses, there's going to be one player that's open. Right now, you probably know who this guy is. I don't. Number 25 in the left corner. Looks like he has an interesting haircut. He has the biggest advantage on the floor. right? So if we skipped it to him, we're probably clicking it to 26 and playing from there, which I would rather the majority of the time. So a reluctant eight.
It would be an easy eight for me, an easy eight for me.
Okay.
Which is what's great about what we're doing here.
Well, let's go one more.
Okay,
we have nice. Brandon Ingram again. He's probably going to shoot a midi.
Yeah.
Five. Let's just make that easy.
Actually, show me the next one. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you're calling that one a five and the other one a three, but, you know, this is a good one to end on. Okay, here we go.
Okay. All right. I'm kind of more on you. Like the last one, I could say easy eight. This is definitely not an eight for me. So this would be a five-ish. Yeah, five.
Yeah, I'm going to say easy five. Yeah. Off balance, outside the smile, very little advantage, momentum going away from the basket, played off one foot. For me, in the situation, got to be playing off two.
And chest in front is another thing to look for, right? Not on the side. It's got a chest in front. Also, here, when you say off balance, here's an indicator. We had a coach in our membership say, hey, look, maybe this is the first mailbag question. How do we get our team to finish better? One thing that I shared was balance before shot is this kind of the sticky language. When you land on one foot, like we see here, it means that you, when you took off, you were off balance. So even if you shoot off one foot, you should be able to land on two, which is an indicator that you're balanced.
Agreed. All right. Well, that was good. I think for today's episode, I suggest that we end that one there. You got a deep dive into the Savvy Shot Scale, how we teach it, how we'd use it, and an invite in to come join us either in our community or our membership if you want to go deeper into all those tools and the systems that we have. And so, Mark, I appreciate you having that that film dialed up and ready. Any final thoughts before we sign out of here?
We'll post it in the community. If you're not part of the community, we'd love for you to be a part. But if you want it, just shoot me a DM and I'll get it to you.
Beautiful. All right. Until next time, you can occasionally date fives, but fall in love with sevens and nines.
And even if you think she's a 10, somebody's sick of her.
Somebody's sick of her. Stay savvy.
Later.